Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
WTCM, welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio. We do have a financial professional in here, a certified financial planner by the name of Mr. Dennis Prout from Prout Financial. Welcome back, sir.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Ron.
And joining Dennis today, to his right,
Shea Pataja.
To your left, to your right if you're looking at
to
the
my
radio.
Right. Your left.
Shea Pataja.
Also known as Shea Pataja if you're a telemarketer.
There we go.
You know, I was just thinking as the music was playing, we should, you know, probably, okay, one of two things. We should talk politics.
Okay.
Or talk about the party we're going to have when the political thing is all done.
Woot, woot.
After next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, shall we?
Yeah. There might
Maybe
be a
we'll
lot of people
celebrate and put some more money in our 401k.
Do not care who wins, just...
just can we be done?
Stop the madness.
Yeah, with the conversation.
Anyway. 401k is looking good the last few days, right?
Well, it's certainly up.
It's up. And
we're going to be talking today about volatility, the effect of market volatility, and some ways you might want to evaluate that or think about it. Excuse me, given that the stock market is down from its high of 923 of 18 by about 7.4% currently. 7.4. It was down about 10 here just a few days ago and is...
Rebounding.
So assiduously mentioned, it's up a little bit here.
We're back to where we were January 8th.
Amazing.
So,
and it makes me think of 1987, because in 1987 the market actually made money, but it had a huge dump
October
of 87. So perspective in all of this can be helpful. How can I gain from this? What things might I want to do? Given my own personal situation, how might I profit from this? How might I turn that page, if you will, and say, what could I do about this thing? And Shea has some great Shea stats today, too.
Tons of them.
Tons of stuff.
We got catching up to do.
Oh, my gosh. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. We're actually live today. Live.
Do I know you people?
Live and in person. Yes.
Yeah, what have you been doing with those extra hours off, Ron?
Sleeping. Primarily, yes.
Taking a nap. Yes.
Early lunch. Yes.
Dreaming of the lovely Laura, as you would say. Yes.
Yes.
Test driving sports cars, reading books at the library.
Yeah, you know.
Extra coffee.
Yeah, all that and above. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lot you can do in an hour.
It's a lot to think about. So... how can you change this? How can you turn this to your advantage? How can you think about setting it up, setting the tee up, if you will? How do I think about retirement, especially if I'm going to be collecting income from this thing? How does this volatility teach me a lesson? For 1 month, the market down about 10%, give or take. It's amazing how quickly that volatility takes effect. And what was the cause? You have all these talking heads talking about the causes of this as well. The cause is basically uncertainty. We can say that.
Humans.
And be legal about that. Humans. Humanity.
Humans.
Uncertainty. Well, how are earnings going to do if interest rates keep coming up in the stock market? If taxes do go up from here? So it's the cost of doing business is the impact on the stock market. It is a bidding process. It's a bidding process, very much like an auction. One person sells a stock and another buys it, both thinking they're correct in that transaction. So thinking about it in terms of an auction or, frankly, a coat that you've been looking at, a winter coat. Well, it's on sale in the spring. Well, it's because it's kind of off season.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it on sale? Is it still the same quality? Well, yes. It's just that I probably won't wear it for about 5 months. So given that, in the company store wants to get rid of that same said coat, they give it to you at a discount. Well, sometimes those stocks trade at a discount because it is an active trading market. Amazing amounts of money trading hands, and it's not just by computer trading either. They're looking to trade cents, C-E-N-T-S, and others are looking to trade based on a business goal or piece, if you will, or a business pyramid. We're looking, given all these things, excuse me, that can be added together, given that business, we're examining it. It makes sense to purchase that through owning the stock.
Sure, but people who are close to retirement aren't thinking that way.
No, they're not. They're not thinking about the nuts and bolts. They're thinking, how am I going to draw income? Well, not everyone. Many are thinking, how am I going to draw income from this thing when it's a roller coaster right now?
Mm-hmm.
And what impact would that have on my income? And that's the key. The key danger to investing too aggressively as you near retirement is having, it's almost like having to go to the banker when you really have to have the money. That's not a good deal. We all know that. If you're going to the banker when you don't really need the funds, it's for an investment, it's long term, all of that, they sense that. Obviously, you do as well. So if you don't have to go to the stock market and get money when it's down, obviously, then you're going to benefit yourself tremendously. So what assets do I have in place that might not necessarily have the same rate of return that can indeed allow me to draw the income so that I'm ready for that eventuality?
Hmm.
And by the way, these classes that we've been teaching have really opened my eyes again. I just, sometimes you think about these things and just looking at all the people in the classes and thinking about that, their eyes aren't, you know, they're not overly concerned, but they're into it because of the responsibility shift. They're concerned, are we going to have enough? What's this going to look like? Should we wait to draw income?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, on these Social Security benefits? Should we draw from other sources? Given those increases, all those are coming into effect.
I liked the towards the end of the maximizing Social Security class, and it was also in the women in retirement class, was the three buckets of where you should have your money allocated when you're in retirement.
Yes.
And, you know, like how much should be liquid, how much should be in long-term investments, how much
should be fixed, generally fixed, mm-hmm. and how much should be in growth investments as well. It tends to take some of the emotion out of it in terms of the investment process. And a lot of times it can allow people to invest longer term when they've been able to think through, you know, given that I do have some fixed investments that don't go down, then I can allow the balance of the portfolio to continue to grow.
Do you remember those percentages off the top of your head?
Yes, and that was simply an example.
Mm-hmm.
Simply an example, and I really don't want to get into that on
Got
the radio it. Show. But yeah, there was a sample example, if you will, of that allocation and what that might look like.
Yeah, and it's nice to see the visual, which obviously for the radio, we cannot
you
do that
bet.
For you. Just imagine.
So, excuse me, what we're talking about today is how do we capitalize this? How do we prioritize what our goals are? And what lessons can be learned? Well, I know I'm not really comfortable, given that I just looked at my 401k statement as an example, with my current allocation, but should I change it right away or should I do that in a more graduated manner? Sometimes responding to this in a more measured way can be one of the best things you can do rather than reacting too quickly. Number two, you might want to review all of this with a financial advisor and taking a look at how do I set this up? What order do I draw the income from? That may be one of the best questions you can ask. What's the order in which I should draw from these differing accounts based on where they're invested and or what my income sources are? Should I take my pension early? Should I take Social Security early or late? How should that look?
Mm-hmm.
At what stage do you know that, though?
5 years out from retirement, 1 year out from retirement?
It's interesting. Laverna said to me on the break a couple of weeks ago, she said, you know, you and Jill should come in and talk about Medicare. And I'm thinking, that's 5 years away. And she said, no, I really mean that. Because then you can see what it's like for yourself in terms of what that conversation is about. I thought that was a great idea. Mm-hmm. So for some, it's 3 to 4 years. Others, man, they got to be 10 years. They want to really think seriously. Some 10, some 15. Well, we got this thing moving ahead in terms of a 401k, but how do we think about that? How do we think more deeply about where those other income sources are? And man, we're seeing more now actually doing the financial plan. What is that going to look like? Given my cost for healthcare, our cost for the trips and travel that we want to do. A great question. What's important to you about money when you're thinking about retirement? What do you want it to achieve for you?
Would that affect where you put your money if you have 401ks and IRAs and you're giving to both of them?
It would.
Okay.
Absolutely, because your 401k may be more conservative. The IRA, if it's a Roth, may be a bit more aggressive, especially if you're adding money every month. But that conversation can really make a huge difference in terms of, gosh, you know, we've got, again, these different avenues. Which generally are we going to draw from first? Excuse me. For some, we have a fixed account in their 401k plan. That may be one of the first places they decide to draw from when they retire. So it's setting that up or thinking about where is the best place to draw the income. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So things to do when the market is down or think about. Capital loss harvesting. Maybe a conversation with your accountant. Well, given that the particular share that I own or a stock that I own is down, could I use that against gains elsewhere? Because there's unlimited losses allowed against gains. There is no limit with that. So if you've got a loss of $10,000 in a stock and you have a gain of $10,000 in another stock, they can offset each other in terms of those trades, selling and buying, if you will. Mm-hmm. Stepped-up basis in inherited property. Inherited property can be sold, generating a capital loss. If you've inherited a property and you inherited it at a higher value than it is today, something to consider selling to take that loss, again, against other assets, possibly. Dollar cost averaging. We kind of mentioned that briefly in the 401k realm. If you are continuing to save in a 401k, a Roth IRA, or a regular IRA, or even a 403b account, continuing to add more shares or add dollars, rather, to buy those shares in that mutual fund can be especially efficient, and what a great time to review the allocation.
You're saying regardless of what the market's doing, dollar cost averaging means you keep putting in the same amount?
You keep putting in the same dollar amount, and if the shares of your mutual fund have gone down, obviously then you're buying more shares mm-hmm. of that mutual fund as the price is lower. Mm-hmm. And the way that that works is you have to continue to invest through that downtrend mm-hmm. to see the price come back up to take advantage of dollar cost averaging.
Got
but
it.
That's the premise behind it, and that you're putting continuing dollars into those accounts, even though they're down at the current time, to take advantage of what's called dollar cost averaging.
Aren't most people on autopilot, though, where that happens?
They are.
Automatically, mm-hmm. yeah.
They may be automatic. Some might decide that they don't want to continue because of the loss, though. That's one okay. point. The second one is, well, what about reallocating what I'm putting in on a monthly basis to possibly, given my time frame and my risk tolerance, take advantage of that decline if I'm quite conservative in what I'm adding on a monthly basis? Everyone follow me there? Follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So it's about income. You don't want to draw from an account when the market is down.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Setting
wait,
that up. Yes, see, I knew you were paying attention. And then tax changes. Do you anticipate tax changes in the future? Would your taxes be higher or lower given those tax decisions that you might make today? Especially when it comes to a Roth conversion, it may make sense to take a look at doing a Roth conversion now because the shares have come down in price of that particular IRA mutual fund you own. Hadn't thought about that. I've owned that mutual fund forever. Well, then it's down 8% or 7% or whatever it is today. You can convert those shares, and I can see Shay is right on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can convert those shares in that IRA to a Roth IRA.
I couldn't even sleep last night thinking about all the possibilities.
Well, she was so excited about it. See? Told you.
By the way, I have information and a question here.
Sure.
Morgan Stanley did a study, and they found out that most Americans didn't take advantage of the Republican tax cuts last December, so they're over-withholding. So this, well, for 2019, they're predicting that tax refunds will be 26% higher. So a lot of people are going to get a lot of extra cash all at once when they get their refunds back. But if they're over-withholding, they could change that, and that's money they're not even missing right now. Obviously, they could start funneling that into their 401 or IRA.
They could.
Their 401ks, yeah.
A great time to take a look at that. And I know this takes another piece of the brain pie, if you will. And go, oh, and you know, I got to get through that detail and talk to the human resources people and you know all that sort of thing. Yeah. If you can, what a great time to do that in terms of possibly adding more funds to your 401k or your IRA. And taking a look again at the same time at the allocation of your particular 401k account. It's amazing, again, the responsibility that each of us has to get this figured out. All right, back to the tax thing and thinking about what we might do about the lower prices. Gifting shares of stock or mutual funds to children. They get your cost basis. They pay the tax if they sell that stock or mutual fund. But given that the prices are lower, that tax that they might pay would necessarily be lower if they liquidate it sooner. And it is not then included in your estate for estate tax purposes if you would be subject to that. Now, keep in mind that for a couple, the amount of money that can pass outside of estate tax today is $11.1 million. $11.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. And there was a question of another, I'll just call him a financial person, the other day on the radio. And he was talking about to a gentleman who wouldn't be subject to tax at all. And he made a blanket statement about the estate tax. And I thought, well, he's not in, most are not subject to estate tax. I believe that the caller was asking about income tax on his income from IRAs and that sort of thing. Obviously, all the income from an IRA, from a regular or traditional IRA, a SEP IRA, 403B, if it's in a pre-tax account, will be taxed when you draw the income out, will be taxed at that point, unless you give through your IRA, simple IRA or SEP IRA, directly to the charity of your choice. That's something else to consider. If you have a 403B or 401K plan, you cannot do that charitable gift through that particular qualified account. Something to remember in terms of, I've got to take these withdrawals anyway. If I have to do that anyway and I want to avoid the tax, what accounts make the most sense?
At what point should people, you know, open their own IRA? Like if they've got a company plan, what age or what level of income do they say, oh, I'm going to have an IRA?
And many don't even know that they could roll their 401k to their IRA. If they're terminated from employment, number one, they can do that. And they may not want to in that case if they want to take withdrawals and they're 55 without having to pay the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it comes down to having the conversation face-to-face. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about those different issues. Well, I want to avoid the penalty. I have to have the income. We got let go. I'm only 56. Well, in that case, leave it in the 401k so you don't have to pay the 10% penalty.
Mm.
Or I've left. I got another great job. I'm not going to need the money. I may want to roll that fund to my, that 401k rather, to my IRA. Or it's in my Roth 401k. I want to roll that to a Roth IRA. So it's always like to like, if you will, in terms of tax qualification. And thinking about what income do I need? Do I need some money out of this? How that might work? We have a question.
By the way, the Dow, by the way, on this, what's that, 10:52 on Thursday, November 1st, the Dow's up 201 points right now.
All right.
Third straight day of
always
rallies.
Good news, yes.
Phil in Interlochen for Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning, Phil.
Coming from an extreme conservative, why does the government, and I don't have this problem, by the way, but why does the government have the right to tell me that I have to delve into money that my IRA has earned and tell me, even though I'm 70 and a half or whatever it is, that I've got to take money out? I don't understand that. Since when does the government have the right to tell me that I've got to spend my money? Can you clarify that for me?
Yes, indeed. Well, if you have it in a Roth, it's not a requirement, but it is the law of the land that you have to take that income at a percentage of about 3.8% or so when you're 70 and a half, and steadily increasing as you age. Congress's thinking on that was because you were able to deduct it when it went in. It grew, in essence, tax-free until you drew it out, that at some point they want you to ante up the tax.
So if you put money into a checking or savings account, they can't make you take in any amount or put in any amount. But because they set up, Congress designed, I'm guessing, by legislation,
exactly,
this particular type of fund, mm-hmm, then they can set up the rules.
They can set up the withdrawal rules, okay, as they set up the plan rules with lots of consultation to allow these types of qualified, tax-qualified accounts to exist. They also set up the withdrawal rules and other lots of other requirements in regards to these accounts.
Kind of almost falls under the taxing authority, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's PROUT financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes.